So the theme of the retreat is the seven factors of awakening. And these are sometimes compared to jewels, called jewels. And there's a famous story in Mahayana Buddhism, that arose after the Buddha. And it has to do with a young man who grew up in a village. And he wanted to see the world, and so off he went into the world. And before he left, a friend of his gave him a coat for his travels. And he went off into the world and eventually got lost in the affairs of the world and his travels and lost his money and became destitute and a pauper and then eventually, after many years, he was able to find his way back to his home village. And so he was happy to be home. People were happy to see him. And the friend who gave him his coat heard the story of his travels and his poverty and his struggles. And he said, "Well, didn't you know that I had sewed in the inside lining of your coat, there's this valuable jewels? All you have to do is open up the lining, and you were actually quite wealthy. You would have managed just fine." And so something like that, the story. And it's, the story is meant to be an allegory for our minds, our hearts, that we get sent off into the world in some way, for dusty world, and somehow we struggle and have our challenges, and we don't know that in the linings of our hearts, lining of our mind or our inner life, there are these jewels that make us wealthy, that will make the world a difference to us, that no matter what challenges we have, including poverty, which is quite challenging for human beings to go through, there's still a kind of inner richness that can support us, can guide us, can somehow make a world of difference in how we go through life's challenges if we have tapped into these, we know they're there and we call upon these jewels. And some of these are the seven factors of awakening. I really kind of associate these seven factors of awakening with awareness. And that's kind of the name of the game, what we're really, that's kind of maybe the key treasure we have. If I could just have a magic wand as a teacher and transmit something to you here in this talk, it would be the feeling of awe at being aware. That the fact that we are conscious beings is just an astounding thing, that somehow out of this, you look up into this night sky at the clouds and the full moon right now, and it's when you kind of, you get a sense of the magnitude of this universe, and then the stardust that somehow coagulated or somehow came together and eventually became these elements, and the elements became stuff, and stuff became life, and life ended up somehow becoming us. But at some point in this process of life growing and developing, something like becoming aware or knowing or registering the environment and taking in data, sense data from the environment and processing in such a way that we know the environment. And at some point, these living beings not only knew the environment, they knew the inner environment of themselves. And sometimes there was some kind of self-awareness that happened, and both awareness of the world around and the world awareness within. And we human beings can so easily take this awareness that we have for granted. Like, don't even notice it. It's just like, What's important is what we're aware of. You know, maybe they don't like me. Are they? Why are they squinting at me? Or why do they move their? Why are they never looking at me? And why do people challenge? You know, are so challenged by me? And I must be a real weirdo. And why am I such a weird person? And how did that end up? And all I have to do with my parents, and you know, and you know, and so all these very important things to think about, we get so wrapped up in them, so involved in them, that we don't notice that the medium is of all of these somehow or other is being aware, being conscious. Without being conscious, all this stuff wouldn't be happening. I don't know if it's really true about fish, but they say that fish don't see the water they swim in. And so whether it's true or not, it points to this idea. The water that we swim in is attention, is awareness. And so that's the material of the retreat, that's the tool, the activity, the jewel, the preciousness that we're working with here on the retreat. It's the art, you know, like Michelangelo was chiseling away the marble to make these great statues. And someone asked him, some of you know the quote better than me, but someone asked, you know, how do you make them? And he said, oh, I see the objects in the stone. And I'm just taking everything away that's not the object that he's making, the sculpture he's making. And so the arm marble, what we're working with, is attention. And we're kind of beginning to chisel away or love away all this extraneous stuff that we add on top of awareness, attention that's not needed. All the stuff that hides the attention itself, that covers it over, because we're so concerned about what we want or what we don't want, or our fantasies and our stories, and so wrapped up in me, myself, and mine stories. Something. So each person's going to be different, but I think you get the idea that we're living in the world of aboutness. We're thinking about something, and doing this practice, we're switching from a world of aboutness to a world of aliveness, a world of freedom, a world of awareness, where awareness, attention, becomes something we tune into, something that we recognize. And this awareness, attention, takes many forms and many ways in which people know the knowing operates. So and different people specialize or have certain strong suits that are really their strong way of how to be aware, how to know. And for some people, it's recognition. And recognition is quite powerful to really recognize that, as I said earlier, you know, to recognize hearing sound as hearing or sound. To recognize that there's listening, or to recognize, oh, that's hearing and that's listening. There's a little distinction between them. Oh, that's one, that's the other. And it might even go be said in words in the mind, or use mental notes, hearing, listening. Cold, tingling. Pressure. I wonder what kind of pressure it is. Is it sharp pressure or soft, diffuse pressure? Oh, it's diffuse pressure. So this recognition of what it is that often comes with a word or a simple word. And that kind of knowing is quite powerful and has its own value in doing mindfulness practice. Other people, they gravitate towards feeling. And some people are very kinesthetic or very somatic and sensory in the way they in the world, and And they just, there's a lot, so they're in their body a lot. They feel and sense things in a rich way. And so when you tell someone like that to kind of be mindful of their breathing, they'll feel what it's like in the body, the body's experience of breathing, experience it. And there might not be much recognition, but they get really focused on the experience, the sensations that are coming to play. And that's how knowing happens. That's how awareness predominates for them, is through the senses. Someone else, it's the sense door of seeing, or the analogy of it in the mind, the mind's eye. And it's neither, there's not the cognitive recognition of something, but it's a clear seeing. But there's very silent seeing. And it's not feeling, but it's more of a little bit, not exactly from a distance necessarily, but not also kind of wedded or in the, you know, intimate with the experience, just observing it. And observing it can, my kind of reference for that is on a nice, sunny, comfortable day, leaning against an oak tree, watching the river go by. Just watching the river go by, or watching the fire, and just watching it. And there's not as, we're not feeling it with the body, we're not necessarily recognizing that all the little wavelets of the river going by, or that's, you know, that's a big wave, that's a little wave, that's a current. But we're just watching it all, just watching and watching and letting things just flow and unfold the way it does. And so some people watching, observing is the strong way in which they are aware of what's happening. And sometimes the what's the shape of knowing? What's the shape of awareness? What's the shape of sensing? What's the size of it? What's the weight of it? In some ways, these are nonsensical questions, but some ways they're not. There can be a kind of general location by which we know and feel awareness from or with. There can be our sense of imagination a little bit comes into play as we try to capture the scope of what awareness is. And there are times when awareness might feel like it has no boundaries, it's very open. Other times our awareness seems to collapse because we're so preoccupied by something and everything seems so tight and the world gets very small and claustrophobic. And but regardless of how we're aware, just to be aware is phenomenal. Wow, how did you end up with this? And why is Gil making such a big deal of it? And partly the reason is that it's the tool, or it's the medium, or it's the door that for this practice. We're cultivating the awareness. We're developing our capacity to be aware in the present moment. And we're strengthening this capacity. Sometimes the way mindfulness is taught, people get the idea that if they just really look carefully at something and really see into their life, into themselves, they'll see the key to happiness. They'll see something that is going to do it for them. And that's not, you know, I wouldn't say that that's exactly wrong, but it's kind of missing one of the important aspects of practice. And that is that it's not in the look, it's not what we see that's important, but what's important is how we see. That we see in a new way, not that we see something new. Or say it a whole different way, that we don't go looking for treasure when we do this practice. Exactly. Like, use the awareness to go searching. And so where is that treasure that Gil's talking about? Is it in, you know, is it in my, must maybe in my fingernails, or maybe it's, you know, in my heart, or no, and it must be in the back of the brain or something. And where is it? But rather, the treasures, these seven factors of awakening, are best found in the looking, in the awareing itself. So it's not the object of awareness so much, it's in the qualities of being aware that the seven factors of awakening are found. And these seven factors are characteristics of awareness that starts becoming clear and present and here with experience. And so developing this awareness, cultivating this awareness that becomes stable, comes with a sense of clarity, it's not distractible so easily, but just really, it's here, is part of what we're doing here in this practice. And so there's a lot of kind of bringing the mind back, starting over again, and using maybe something like breathing as a focus to develop some concentration, some stability. But we're also developing, as we do so, the stable awareness is something that then begins to grow or expand or show itself, so that eventually we'll see that these seven factors of awakening are part of awareness. They're partners in awareness. They come along with awareness. So that's, some teachers say that what you seek is found in the seeking. What you're looking for is found in the looking. So these seven factors of awakening. So the first of the seven factors is the mindfulness factor of awakening, which in Pali, the word mindfulness is sati, S-A-T-I. And the reason I want to use the word sati for a little bit is that I prefer not to use the word mindfulness. I actually prefer to translate it as sati, as awareness. And the reason for that is that there's often a confusion in English-speaking Dharma circles about what mindfulness is. And to try to make this simple, but to explain this confusion in a way that's helpful, there's a distinction between awareness, strong, stable, clear awareness, and the practice that leads to that strong, stable awareness. So we can say that there's sati and there's sati practice, meaning the practice that leads to that stable, strong awareness. There is mindfulness and there's mindfulness practice, the practice that leads to this mindfulness. And so in the Buddha's teaching, he talks about establishing mindfulness and using a number of things as the basis or the things on which we establish this clear, strong mindfulness. And the basis for this mindfulness is observing one of the forms of attention I described earlier, observing the body and the body, an intimacy with experiencing the body in and of itself, just here, not our judgments about the body, our interpretations of the body, the purpose of our body, the history of our body, just experience the body in and of itself, not comparing it to anybody else's body or your body in the past or how it's going to be. Just experiencing body in and of itself. Observing it. observing the feeling tones of the body, the pleasance and unpleasantness of the body, what's comfortable and not comfortable, in and of itself, meaning to really experience how things are pleasant and unpleasant, or neither, in the simplicity of that, without our preferences, without our meaning-making, our predictions around it, our reactivity to it, just pleasant, just unpleasant. Just the simplicity, that kind of way of being. And this is a very important way of developing mindfulness, is to learn to recognize not the sophisticated complexity of why we're feeling what we're feeling, but to simply, oh, it's pleasant. Oh, it's unpleasant. And then to learn how to be aware of pleasant and unpleasant in the simplicity of awareness without being for or against it. Not having awareness hijacked by our preferences, by our dislikes, by our likes. Not having awareness encumbered by all the complex ways in which it can be around pleasant and unpleasant. And eventually to come in this practice to a kind of freedom around the pleasantness and unpleasantness of experience. And in a certain way, to be in a healthy way, indifferent, non-preferential about whether the experience you're having is pleasant or whether it's unpleasant. And to come to that kind of balance and equanimity makes more and more sense to do so as the awareness gets stronger and stronger. As we have this treasure of presence, this treasure of really being present and seeing and feeling and knowing the experience intimately, then we begin feeling, oh, this is a home. This is a place. This is a place that's really good to be aware of this way. Why would I now diminish the light of awareness by getting involved in reactivity or being preferences and wanting it to be different or wanting to hold on to it? And it's not that you're. It's a belief that you shouldn't do that, be reactive or be for and against. It becomes so glaringly obvious. In the goodness, at homeness, and being present in awareness, that of course I don't want to get tied up in these things. Of course it's better to just sit and observe it and be with it. Observing feelings, feeling tones, in and of themselves, the simplicity of it. Observing the mind in and of itself. Mind in the mind. Observing the dhammas, the mental processes that lead to freedom and those that lead to being entangled. To really see these things in a clear, direct, simple way. And to know these, and the Buddha uses all these light words to experience them, to feel them, to recognize them, and to observe them. These are the three different ways of practicing. These are the practices we're doing. So these are the mindfulness practices, the purpose of which is to develop and appreciate and be awed by something that's kind of broader, wider than any of those three ways of knowing, which is awareness itself, which is the feeling of just being conscious, just being aware. And you kind of know that you're kind of in this place of awareness, of sati, when you appreciate being aware regardless of what you're aware of, where you have a sense that awareness is not dependent on what you're aware of. So, for example, if you know it's cold, you kind of, that knowing of cold is dependent on it being cold. To know it as a direct experience. Observing an itch on the cheek can only happen when the itch is happening. Feeling warmth somewhere in your body only happens when there's warmth. So certain kinds of knowing only happen when there's something to be known. When awareness becomes strong, there's a sense that it might shift and different objects of things come into its scope and different things happen in relationship to it. But there's also a feeling that awareness is also independent of what is known. It's stronger, it's bigger, it's more encompassing. It can include everything in it. So when these four foundations, foundations or establishments for awareness, when we practice in their domain and are knowing things, experiencing them, feeling them, or observing them, those are all mindfulness, sati practices. They are not sati themselves. So when mindfulness in English is defined by these practices, people then think that, oh, the recognition is the mindfulness. The experiencing, the feeling of it is the mindfulness. The observing is the mindfulness. It's okay to see it that way. It's not a problem too much. But except that it might limit the discovery of the strength of awareness that develops as over time, that the sense of being aware, the awareness that kind of an intimacy, a presence, an inner stillness or warmth or at-homeness in awareness, in being conscious. That the Buddha sometimes likened or kind of made a metaphor for is a person's ancestral homeland. This is your ancestral homeland, the home of your ancestors, or that dwelling in awareness, aware of the body, observing the body, observing the feeling tones, observing the mind states, observing the dhammas. This is your home. So at this point, mindfulness as a factor of awakening, it's not something we're doing anymore, but rather something that's closer to what we're being. And so these seven factors of awakening, they're both practices that we practice and cultivate and develop, but they're also abidings. They're also states of being that we can dwell in, that can kind of fill us or kind of hold us or the context for who we are. And here's where we're getting the treasure, the jewels, that rather than being caught up in the details of our life, which the details are important, but there's more than being caught up in them and being hijacked and held hostage to them or lost in them, distracted by them. There's more to be found. And as there's possible to find, to be free of them, not be so caught in them, and so begin appreciating the wonderfulness, the specialness, the awesomeness of being aware of all the what's going on. That just being aware of these things is significant. Things don't have to change. You don't have to necessarily understand what's happening. But to have the awareness be clear enough that you begin appreciating that you are aware. Wow. Awareness is always in the present moment. And so one of the reasons to be cultivating and developing this present moment attention is so that we can start appreciating awareness more. Wow, I'm aware. Wow, I know what it is. I recognize it. I'm watching it. Wow. I'm feeling it. Wow. And I think that it's probably some of you are thinking that Gil is being kind of ridiculous because it can seem so insignificant to just be aware. I mean, you might miss out on the important things in life. You know, there's all these amusement parks you can go to. You can go on amusement rides, and it's very exciting. And if you just kind of dwell in this awareness thing, you might miss the next big fun ride. So what's motivating us in doing this practice is not to dwell in some wonderful state of being like the seven factors of awakening, not to kind of appreciate the awesomeness of being aware, but rather how this process of developing our ability to be in the present moment, the slow process, takes a lot of patience, a lot of acceptance, a lot of forgiveness, a lot of compassion. That's this process of coming into the present moment is a movement towards freedom. No longer being hijacked, held hostage, or entangled the details of our life where there's no freedom. Sometimes we're so consumed with the world, activities and things, that some people say there's no breathing room for me, I feel claustrophobic. But to open up and start discovering freedom from the past. Maybe we don't have to solve the past. Freedom from the future. Maybe we don't have to always plan the future. Freedom from fantasy. Maybe we don't have to spend our days fantasizing about whatever. Freedom from reactivity. Or maybe we don't have to relate everything that happens to us to me, myself, and mine. There's freedom to let things just be and not getting entangled. This movement towards freedom, towards letting go, towards release. Not because that is just good to do by itself, but because it begins opening the gates, the floodgates, for these beautiful qualities inside of us to begin growing and developing and becoming strong. That we really limit ourselves when we get consumed and contracted and preoccupied by things. There's less room for things to breathe, less sunlight for things to germinate and grow and develop. When we kind of get caught. The Buddha described the five hindrances as things that obscure, that conceal, that hinder, that create, that prevent wisdom. That somehow, and what these hindrances represent are these ways in which we get pulled into our preoccupations so intently that there's a little room for awareness, little room for other things to begin happening. Whereas the seven factors of awakening, they represent the opposite. When awareness becomes more open, when we become less preoccupied, more free, when we uncover things and see clearly what's going on here, when we don't hinder anything and get in the way, then there's this room for something very different to happen. And something begins to grow and develop in that room, in the space. So one of the reasons we let go of desires, sensual desires, ill will, fantasy, past and future, is not because we're aversive to them, but rather we're trying to give an opportunity for something to begin to grow and develop and to come to some kind of fulfillment. These beautiful qualities that we have inside. And those qualities are the seven factors of awakening. And the reason why they're there, why they can grow and develop, is that they come along with the growth in awareness. They come along with how awareness spreads and develops. Just like light spreads through a room, if you take off the black tape that covers the bulb, and the bulb is no longer concealed or hidden by the black tape, then the light will finally, if the bulb is on, the light will flow into the room. When we're no longer caught up in our preoccupations and our fears and our desires, our conceits, something begins to glow and grow and expand. Or sometimes this momentum towards this growth in the practice feels like if you put a ball and release it at the top of a hill, it'll roll down the hill, unless you put something on the hill to block it. And if there's a lot of blocks along the way, it'll take a long time for, you know, they keep being blocked every time you free it. But the practice of letting go and really showing up here and being here is removing the blocks, so the ball of the practice, the ball of mindfulness, of awareness, of these seven factors, can begin to grow and roll down and move in the natural direction to growth that they have. And so these states of mindfulness. So the Buddha has this wonderful, I think, maybe I shouldn't be the one talking about it now, but he talks about listening to a Dharma talk. And he says that if you listen to a Dharma talk where the five hindrances operating, then things just get obscured and dark, and, you know, then things don't really gel. But if you listen to a Dharma talk and you get a... No, he said it this way. He said, if you listen to a Dharma talk without really careful, full attention, then the hindrances can take over and things get darker and more obscure. But if you listen to a Dharma talk with your full attention, just give yourself completely over to really listening to the Dharma, then the seven factors of awakening grow and develop. And that's because it's in the nature of this full attention itself that there's a room for something to begin to unfold and open and show itself. It's possible for there to be greater clarity. It's possible there's a kind of a nice energy of engagement and listening and present. There's something that the tradition calls joy, sense of delight or appreciation or inspiration that can well up in that awareness. Not just because of what's being said in the Dharma talk, but rather in the the goodness of just that attention, that it being present, that openness, that receptivity and interest. There can be a tranquility in that clear giving our attention fully there, not holding back, not resisting, not doubting, not like being dismissive, just you don't have to agree with the Dharma talk. You can think the Dharma talk's a terrible Dharma talk. But if you're really free, you show up to really listen. Okay, let's be here. Let's listen and take this in. It's the listening that's important. It's the awareness. One of my favorite Dharma talk stories is the story of the Zen master in Japan in the early 60s, 1960s. Old man. People travel from all over Japan to hear him give a Dharma talk. And the thing about him, he had such a soft voice, people could never understand what he was saying. But it didn't matter. And that's, I hope I grow old like that. That at some point it doesn't matter what I say. But people are rapt. Whoa, you know, because it's the raptness, the engagement, the being aware. That's the key, not the talk. At some point, you know, so that then there's this confidence and contentment in this kind of, and then tranquility sets in, like ease, a relaxation. And with relaxation, it makes room for everything included, nothing left out. All of me is here with this experience. That's kind of what samadhi is, concentration. And then equanimity. The non-reactivity, when we know and recognize how good it is to be aware, that just to be aware of something, we're not supposed to be non-reactive because a good Buddhist is non-reactive. We become non-reactive because, wow, it's so much better that way. Awareness just is so lucid and clear and stable, and it just has so much goodness that gets lost when we become reactive. Wow. So the seven factors of awakening as qualities that come with awareness. The first factor of awakening. The mindfulness factor of awakening. The sati factor of awakening. And that's what we're cultivating on the retreat. We're cultivating awareness. And it's cultivated by being in the present moment, showing up for your experience here, trusting that that's where it's good to be. Being patient, starting over again, over and over and over again. Many, many times, thousands of times we start over. And each time you start over, you're reinforcing, developing, strengthening this capacity to be aware in incremental steps. And then, so we know, we recognize what's happening over and over again, or we feel what's happening over and over again, or we observe what's happening over and over again. Whichever one of these is your kind of thing. And then as awareness gets stronger, that becomes more like a state than an activity. And as sati becomes more of a state rather than an activity, then you might begin to see the other factors of awakening follow along. And that one that sometimes follows as mindfulness gets stronger is that there's a clarity in the mindfulness, clarity in the awareness, which allows for the investigation factor of awakening, which Inez will talk about tomorrow. So, may you be awed by your capacity to be aware, and may you value, appreciate, and stay close to your awareness over these next 23 hours. and 8 minutes. And then and the more you kind of appreciate mindfulness, practice mindfulness to the best of your ability in a relaxed way, in a forgiving way, in a generous way, in a loving way, and you get a sense of mindfulness, the practices of mindfulness, the awareness, then you'll be prepared for Inez's talk on the investigation factor of awakening. So to make a transition from this talk to back into the retreat mode, why don't you assume your meditation posture again? And if you'd like, you can close your eyes. And then outside the edges of your thinking, beyond the edges of how you think, how are you aware now? Thank you all very much.